Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Wanted to do a podcast about tonight's strange, interesting 121-111 win over the Toronto Raptors. There are a lot of different things that you can kind of take away from this game, though takeaway might be a little bit too strong. But for me, the place to start is the remarkable first quarter. The Raptors are one of the league's best teams. Don't really need to give it any qualifiers beyond that. They actually have a legitimate chance of winning the Eastern Conference in terms of regular season record. I do not expect them to be their representative in the NBA Finals because the Cavs are really good. But the Warriors threw 42 points on them in the first quarter. It was a 42-17 stretch. And the Warriors shot 72% from the field in that first quarter. And at that time, only had two turnovers. And then actually, in terms of an efficiency standpoint, went past that with 78.6% in the second quarter, but they had nine turnovers. So that is obviously a very different thing. And but the takeaway there, I guess, is that the Warriors at their best offensively are an incredible team. The Raptors have been the best offensive team overall this season if you go by offensive rating, but the Warriors have kind of a different type of ceiling, and there is a fundamental difference that gets focused on a lot of whether the shots go in or not. But the process in this game offensively beyond the turnovers was very good. They were generating quality looks. They were getting good shots for Klay, good shots for Durant, good shots for Steph. The bench guys were pretty efficient for most of the game. They were only really taking open shots, but they were making those open shots. So the Warriors offense carried them early on, but what has been a consistent point over the last few weeks when the Warriors have been playing well, and for the most part, of course, they have, is that the defense has really carried the day. And so they do deserve a lot of credit for having that offensive resilience early on, for just dominating. But remember, some of it was open shots. That's true. Toronto only shot 19% in that first quarter, 19% from the field, which opened up a lot of fast break opportunities. And the Warriors were active. They were playing good defense early on, and that helped fuel the offense. The Warriors actually had 12 fast break points just in that first quarter alone, and then another 5 in the second quarter, which is not nearly as good as the first quarter, but still pretty impressive. And they did it with a lot of different personnel groupings. They relied early on traditional center sets with Zaza Pachulia, did a solid enough job defensively, and JaVale was fine, a little bit better, I would say, than usual on that end, just making sure he was in the right place and trying to affect shots. Didn't always affect them, but was pretty consistently trying. And in that early part, they were doing a kind of a worse job on the defensive glass just because the Raptors have a lot of guys that can put some pressure there, and when you're trying to get good heat on the shots, sometimes that allows those things to seep in, but they still had an incredibly effective defense overall. And then how that ties in is they lost a little bit of that effort, so that consistency in the second and third quarters. Toronto was able to get more reliable open threes for Terrence Ross, and most notably for Kyle Lowry, who had a nice run in this game. But down the stretch, the Warriors' offense stumbled again, and their defense ended up carrying the day because they got enough on that end to make it work. They were only 26% from the field in that fourth quarter, only scored 17 points against one of the league's best offenses, but the Raptors only scored 24, and that was enough to ensure the Warriors got a 10-point win, and they got close to blowing the lead. It was 18 at its largest point in that fourth quarter, got all the way down to 5, but even at that point, it never really felt in jeopardy. If the Raptors had scored again, that probably would have turned it a little bit, but it wasn't that ridiculous. And this was also an example when I had Adam Wardson on talking about the Cavs game. I talked about the idea of the Warriors benefiting, broadly speaking, from a looser whistle. And the Raptors generally, they can vacillate a little bit in terms of the fouls they draw. But they didn't do a ton of damage at the line in this game. There were not a ton of fouls called in the game. 16 for the Warriors, 18 for the Raptors. It's not a ridiculous number. And both teams shot about the same number of free throws, 22 for the Raptors, 18 for the Warriors. So not a big disparity there. A little bit different from the Cavs game. Nobody was in serious foul trouble in the game. There was one point where Klay had two in the first half, and that might have been why he was out a little longer than usual, but nothing too big other than that. But the defense was a series of different guys. Draymond, in particular, early on was great. He was switching when he needed to. He was pressuring when he needed to be more of a rim protector and working pretty hard on the defensive glass. Pachulia was fine. And then late, inevitably helped by getting a block in the short amount of garbage time they had. But Durant was very good as a help defender, did a nice job in this game. And Durant has been a good bellwether for the Warriors defensively because Draymond is always there. His consistency makes him different in that way because he's always there, and the Warriors as a team can vacillate a little bit. Guys like Steph Curry can be inconsistent. This game, Durant, he's only credited with defending four shots at the rim in the game. The Raptors missed all four. One of them was that big block on DeMar DeRozan at the end, and then Demari Carroll blocking pseudo garbage time, which was like a minute long. And Durant can do a great job in that role. I actually asked Klay Thompson about what he thought about Durant's defense, and this is what he said. You saw Durant play some great defense in the Western Conference Finals. Is there anything playing with him has made you appreciate more about him on that end?
Just his commitment to that end. I mean, he's so good offensively, you kind of overlook what he does on that side of the ball. And he's committed to playing great defense, and he's so versatile, he can guard every position with his great length, and he's such a great shot blocker, has amazing timing. So, yeah, we expect him to play like that as far as protecting the rim and just being a great defender because he has the ability.
I thought that was interesting, and it's true that the Warriors did see a lot of what Durant can do. One of his best defensive performances as a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder was against the Warriors in that Western Conference Finals. But his consistency on that end has been substantially better than in prior years. It's still not anything like what Draymond is doing, but it doesn't have to be. And I mentioned before the Klay audio that Durant, the Raptors were 0-4 when Durant was the defender at the rim. They were actually 8 of 28 overall. That's a ridiculous 28.6%, and shots at the rim are some of the best shots you can have in the NBA. By comparison, though, this is far outside the norm. The Warriors shot 70% on the same kind of contested shots at the rim. They were 21 of 30. Draymond was a similarly strong. They were 3 of 8 when he was the closest guy. David West, 0 for 3. A couple of those were bunnies that got missed. But the Warriors did a nicer job than they usually do defending in that area. And they've been successful defensively in a few different ways, but they generally break down in somewhat similar ways. And we saw a few pieces of that throughout this game. They botched a couple of switches. There was one play where David West was on Kyle Lowry due to a switch. And whether it was because he just didn't really want to be over there or because he thought he could be a help defender, he just left Kyle Lowry, and Lowry got open. They passed him the ball and he just drilled an open three. And it's a situation that totally makes sense. You know, a big guy playing against Kyle Lowry is a very active guy, very physical guy, and can shoot the lights out. And he actually had a nice game offensively today, at least in terms of shooting 5 of 12 from 3, 4 of 5 from the line, and only 3 turnovers, which is better than a lot of the primaries for the Warriors. So Lowry can do that, and you don't really want to leave him. Or a couple other weird possessions where Terrence Ross got loose and it didn't really make much sense. But overall, the Warriors played well on that end, and a lot of the shots that, and particularly DeMar DeRozan hit, were well contested. That is something DeMar DeRozan does better than almost everybody else in the league. It's part of the reason he's an all-star and has been near the league lead in scoring most of this year, because he's good at making hard shots. And the Warriors deserve credit for making most of his shots more challenging. Also, it was interesting to see how Dwayne Casey used his rotation, because early on, the Raptors couldn't do much of anything. Pascal Siakam, who's their rookie, who has been starting because Jared Sullinger has been hurt the whole year, he's done a nice job overall. He had a good game against the Warriors when they played in Toronto. He was in for the first 420, which involved the Warriors just going on that huge run and never came back in the game. It helps that Patrick Patterson played well, Bebe Noguera played well, and their small lineups, broadly speaking, did a good job. But Casey, I guess you could say, deserves credit for going away from the things that weren't particularly working. And even Valanciunas, who has been, you know, a stalwart for them in many ways when he's been healthy, he got bounced out of the rotation a little bit also because the Warriors can abuse him. They can do a good job of exploiting him in the pick and roll. And that ties in with another one of the stories of this game, which Draymond said to not read too much into, which was, I laughed a little bit, was that they actually ran a lot more pick and roll. It was a little bit of a story over the last couple days after the Cleveland loss. And it was another reminder of how good the Warriors are in that. And Anthony Slater brought up an interesting point that the Warriors were running more pick and roll early, and Stephen Curry's stat line looked, you know, it looked not pedestrian, but it didn't look as dominant as it felt like he was playing at moments of the game. And I speculated at the time that I thought his secondary assists would end up looking good. What a secondary assist basically is the pass that leads to a pass. So a hockey assist is another way of doing it, because hockey gives two assists on a goal when both are relevant. And Curry ended up with five. And I had somebody, it was a good clarifying question on Twitter, saying, well, what does that mean? And last year, Curry led the league in secondary assists with 2.5 per game. This year, he's leading the league with 2.4. So five is double his league leading average. It's not the easiest, you know, it's something the sport view data tracks now. It would have been harder in the previous days, but it shows how well the ball was moving. And when you think about the ideal form for a Steph Draymond pick and roll, unless it yields a Curry open shot, it actually is that hockey assist for Curry, because he passes the ball to Draymond, who generally has some sort of odd man advantage. He makes the right decision, and that is the person who makes the shot rather than Green himself. I've had a pretty consistent criticism of opposing teams that they play Green more as a scorer than as a passer in those circumstances, but that is your instinct. Your instinct is if a guy, especially if it's a bigger dude, is rolling to the rim, that what he's trying to do there is score. Oftentimes, Draymond is looking to assist. He had a nice one to JaVale McGee. They get another nice one in that circumstance, Andre Iguodala, and ended up, you know, in the overall game having 10 assists, somewhat close to a triple-double. He was 14, 6, and 10. So I don't generally think if you're four off, you're that close. But anyway, he did his part in this game to make sure that it all worked, and Stephen Curry did as well. Curry also had a few moments that looked more like MVP Steph Curry, including an early pull-up three, which really got the crowd into it. And those moments are still pretty rare. They're not exactly what they were before, but there were also a couple of the negative throwback Steph Curry moments, including a really bad pass late in the fourth quarter where he was trying to be overly fancy, and the read itself was bad. That's something that's a little bit different for Steph sometimes. The guy he was trying to pass to was well covered, wasn't really an opportunity that was going to stem from that. I believe it was Draymond Green, but he also threw the pass way too fancy, and it was easily picked off, I think, by Kyle Lowry, and that led to a transition opportunity for the Raptors. I understand that Curry will always have a little bit of that wildness in his game. I have zero problem with that, but there is a limit to it. And if it was a no-win play in the first place, it's a lot harder to justify doing all that, just like sometimes he goes behind the back when it's unnecessary, when it's not deceiving or something like that. Because there's a time and a place for behind the back passing. And Curry actually used it well one time in this game. He, in transition, went behind the back to Clay, and the defender wasn't really ready for it, and Clay was able to shoot before the contest really got there. So that is when you want to use a back-to-the-back pass, behind-the-back pass. And he did a nice job. Clay Thompson was good overall in this game. He most of the time had the assignment on DeMar DeRozan, made DeRozan work. DeRozan ended up 10 for 23 from the field. Clay himself was 8 for 18. And like in the Cleveland game, he helps the offense by having such a quick release. There were a few times in this game where he was open, got a pass, and got the shot off before the contest would come, but most people wouldn't get it off that quickly. And it's an analog to something that LeBron James does, which is that his passes have so much speed on them and are generally unconventional in some other ways that he can pass a guy open. Clay can shoot himself open, which is very unusual and incredibly valuable for a player who is much better catch and shoot than he is off the ball. Curry has those benefits that he can pull up and get guys uncomfortable, but Clay has to manufacture it in a little bit of a different way, and he certainly did that in this game. I talked a little bit about the fourth quarter struggles earlier, and I also wanted to include a question from my podcast partner, Nate Duncan, because we actually both had mics at the same time and far away from each other. We hadn't communicated this at all. He was next up because it's basically on when you request a question, and he asked the question that I was going to ask of Coach Kerr about their fourth quarter execution.
Coach, last year your late game offense really was unstoppable with that Draymond at center lineup. This year it seems like in a lot of these games teams are switching, things bogged down, you haven't been able to score at that rate. What can you do about that?
Well, it's a good question. We've got to get better with that for sure. And I thought tonight we were almost just trying to get to the finish line instead of, you know, running through it. And we had a lot of bad possessions down the stretch. So we've got to look at it and be stronger with our cutting and our screening and stronger with the ball and finish the game better.
Fair enough answer from Kerr. We are going to have to see how all of this works out. And the switching does appear to affect it. And that was the last thing that I really did want to talk about in the show is Kevin Durant had another good game overall, but he needs to shift his expectations, is probably the best way of putting it, in those late game situations. And it's an attitude thing. It's a mentality thing. And early on, I was noticing it more when he got a big switched on him. There was a play with Mirza Teletovic, and then I think there was one with John Lure earlier in the season where Durant settled for a 20-footer and didn't really push too hard for it. In this game, it was actually more with a small on him, Kyle Lowry a couple of times, DeRozan once or twice, and instead of trying to draw foul, instead of pushing into the lane, Durant got to about 20 feet, said, "That's good enough," and shot. Now, a 20-foot shot by Kevin Durant is better than a 20-foot shot by almost anybody else, but it is not as good as a 10-foot shot, as free throws or something else like that, especially when you consider the way that they can open up other things for other players. And there are a lot of different approaches to late-game situations, particularly when teams have the lead, but one that I personally ascribe to is the idea that you want to use clock when you can, but a great look is almost always worth taking because, like, if you can get a layup, you can get a dunk, and it also can energize other people. So when you get into that ball killing, clock killing kind of approach, you generally take away some of the best looks. And yeah, you do want to limit the amount of possessions the other team has, but if you can put points on the board through clean looks, through free throws, that's better. It's better than running the clock. You have to be really confident in it, though, and it's an activity level that can be hard to sustain. One of the reasons it doesn't happen as much is also because it's very taxing, and you're trying to put in a lot of work on the defensive end as well, and Durant, of course, was doing that. So changing the expectations, changing the mentality would certainly help. Running some pick and roll would certainly help. You want to try some different things just to see what works, but I am somewhat confident that the Warriors will do that over the next couple months, especially considering this is a team that doesn't have a ton of flaws and an even smaller amount of correctable ones. So fourth quarter offensive execution is something they can work on. It's something they can coach the players up. And getting more experience with each other likely will help. I can't say that for sure because you never really know. They had some struggles last year, particularly against Cleveland, but at other moments in the playoffs as well. And that team had plenty of continuity, so it wasn't really the same thing. So we'll have to really see how that works out. But it's something to watch, and it's something to be a little bit concerned by. But like many other things, it will depend on how long it persists and everything else like that. So I think that's enough on this game. It was so dominant early on that I don't think as much about the Warriors letting the lead back, especially because Toronto's second unit with second unit's a little bit of a misnomer, but Kyle Lowry plus the bench has actually been one of the NBA's best lineups, partially because they play against second units and they're quite good. I'm not downtrodden. I'm not surprised that group put some big numbers on the Warriors because they're really, really good. And outside of that, there were some disturbing times, and I was intrigued by both Kevon Looney and Pat McCaw getting DNP CDs. As far as I know, both those guys, and a DNP CD, by the way, is when it's a coach's decision, so it's not like it's a player who's hurt and they're saying, oh, they can't play, maybe you don't have enough inactive spots. As far as I know, they were healthy scratches. That's probably a better way of putting it. So we'll see if that continues. Clark had already taken the primary spot for McCaw in the rotation. Looney has been largely pushed out by Pachulia, West, and JaVale McGee, plus Draymond playing minutes and Durant playing at the four. So we'll see how that happens moving forward. I don't know yet for sure when, if I'm going to do Locked On Warriors about Friday's game against the Dallas Mavericks. I will actually not be covering it in person. I'll be watching it probably a little bit after the fact. If I am so moved, I will do a podcast on it. Otherwise, we will be back to the normal schedule next week and talking about everything else. So that will be recording an episode that you can listen to on your January 2nd commute for those of you who are going back to work. So if you have any feedback, good, bad, indifferent, you can reach out to me, Danny LaRue, NBA@gmail.com. I don't know exactly what that episode is going to be at this point. I'll just kind of touch base on various things. Also, at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DanyLeroux. I'm looking forward to, you know, just a little bit of a homestand, seeing how all this goes. There is a crazy thing that the Warriors play all of their games the first half of January in Northern California. That is often a good thing. It gives continuity and you don't have to travel. And generally speaking, that also gives you a lot of rest advantages because they don't really give teams very often. They don't give them a home back-to-back or anything crazy like that. It actually did happen to the Clippers recently, but it doesn't happen very often. So can look at that. Also, for those of you who are interested in my other work, I have a podcast that should be out by the time most of you are listening to this with Sam Vecini of Sporting News and various other outlets. He's a draft guy for Real Jam Radio talking about the draft, which is not as relevant to the Warriors right now, but still definitely interesting. So you can check that out as well. Always thrilled to be a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If I don't do another show before the weekend, you should definitely check out, well, either way, the Locked On Raiders, Locked On Niners for your football needs, or if you're a transplant, any of the other ones have one for every team. And you can also check out Locked On NBA, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, and any of the other NBA pods. A lot of them are doing really good work right now. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.